The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human being and are solely the property of the Bright Side Chat.
Hey, welcome back to the Bright Side. We have a lot to get to. We talk Adam Warlock rumor, Last Night on Earth. We talk about the ever-changing streaming landscape and how it pertains to comic books, which is just great for us. Arrowverse, plenty of great books to talk about. And we give Attack of the Clones the Bright Side treatment, and I want to go watch this movie again. I think that when you're done listening to us, you're going to want to go see that movie again. If I'm wrong, let us know. So let's head into the store. Hey, John.
Hey, DJ.
It's a good thing. Honestly, it's a great thing that you're there and I'm here.
Why is that?
I'd be in your store every day.
Oh, yeah. That wouldn't be bad.
We haven't talked.
I might not get any work done, but exactly. That would be a good
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. No, and I wouldn't get any work done because I don't right. do this for a living.
That's true.
So it's like we haven't talked all week. A bunch of stuff has come up. So here we are. I'm back in your store again. Happy to be back at Arkham Comics and Games. It's a nice seat you have provided for me.
I know, right? I spared no expense. Hey, before we get started, I wanted to run something by you because I was thinking that I may need to record another disclaimer to go at the beginning of our episodes.
Really?
Because
why?
Yeah, because I don't know if you know this. I was thinking about it the other day and I think upwards of 90% of the things I say come straight out of my butt. So, with no preparation or looking up at all.
That was
we
went with Brightside, but that was 1B.
Right.
Stuff coming straight out of our butts.
Coming straight out of my butt.
We thought Brightside would play better.
So, you know, with that being said, you know, no matter how much conviction it sounds like I have, there's a pretty good chance that what I'm saying is incorrect. So I think, you know, we may need to put that out there because I don't necessarily need people flooding in to correct me every time I'm wrong.
Why? Who's flooded now? I didn't even see anything.
Well, we had a pretty long conversation last week on Thursday.
Oh, that? Yeah. No. Yeah. So we're all wrong. We're always wrong. So I'm wrong too. What was the one that wasn't? We're all wrong. That's the whole point of this. But see, we're wrong so many times.
I just figured we might want to say, we just might want to put it out there that I'm like, you know, for the most part, full of crap and don't take anything I say too seriously.
No, but here's the thing. We just keep throwing crap and then one of these days it's going to be right and we're just going to dance.
Well, I mean, a broken clock is still right twice a day.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. So. All right. Yeah, I still think it was a better choice to go with Brightside than stuff coming out of our butt.
Yeah, maybe. Well, it has a better ring to it.
Well, you're in a comic.
It looks better on a t-shirt.
Yeah, it does. You're in a comic book store all day. You know what gets slung around. That's all you talk about. All right. We have a ton of stuff to get to. I could go off on a huge tangent on that note.
I know.
So, my mind, my ADD. So, all right, I had to make this note. So, you know, last week we did the competition with the little thing to win the original art cover for the Spider-Man comic, right?
Right.
And Dr. Joe won. And he won. It's like, I had to tell everybody what he did. So, he answered on Twitter right away as soon as he heard it. He was the first one. I think it was before noontime he answered. But he had just started our podcast, and the question was, who was our art teacher?
Right.
And he wanted to win so bad, and he listens to our podcast so much, that instead of just, he heard the question at the beginning, because I put it out in the beginning.
Yeah.
Instead of just listening to the podcast, he actually stopped that podcast and just kept going back. He swore he heard it earlier, so he researched through our other podcasts to find it first.
Wouldn't it have been faster to research the podcast he was listening to?
But he didn't know if it was going to be there or not, but he had an idea, and I'm like, the guys are, hey. He already got a t-shirt, and I'm like, I was blown away. He DM'd me, and I was like, you did all of that. I was like, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty industrious.
That's going, I didn't even remember where else. I know we've talked about him in the past.
I mean, I'm on the podcast, and I don't want to go back and listen to my old episodes.
I did. So, I did. I went back and listened to our Phantom Menace.
You had to find it?
No.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It wasn't good.
Yeah.
It was. That was the first one we had music on.
Yeah.
It was the first.
Well, it was only like our second or third one.
No,
anyway,
it was like
right?
a sixth.
Really?
Yeah. We were on. We were only on. SoundCloud before that was the first one where we were on iTunes.
Oh, okay.
So that we announced it on that one. We had music on that one. Yeah,
so we were already, you know, forming what was to become the masterpiece that we have now. Is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Yo, remember in ceramic?
We were stoking the flames of greatness already.
Remember when we were in ceramics and you had that lump of clay on the wheel? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that lump of clay right now is kind of forming a vase, but it's about to go, like, off the rails.
So, in this scenario, am I Patrick Swayze or Demi Moore? That's what I want to know.
Well, yeah, speaking of that, we did get our tweet today using the term sexy. So,
oh, yeah?
You didn't see that one?
No, I didn't.
Pete got his t-shirt, and he called it a sexy t-shirt.
Nice.
He got his t-shirt in the mail today. He tweeted it out saying, I got my sexy t-shirt in the mail. I was like, nobody's ever used that term before. I don't know why.
Right.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I do. I took one look at our the header on our Twitter page.
And we knew why.
Yeah. All right. So, and another announcement. Speaking of that, we announced on the last Star Wars podcast that we did that were on iTunes. We are on Stitcher now. Woo! I looked at that and the show notes on that aren't optimized for Stitcher. They're pretty much our show notes are optimized for iTunes. So okay. Like when you see it on iTunes, how it comes out nice and in order on Stitcher, it's just like one giant long paragraph.
Oh.
But I also found out we're on, and this sounds silly, I found out we're on CastBox. But I don't think CastBox is it's not a place that publishes your stuff. I think that's a podcast player. So if people out there listen going, dumb, you're on this and you don't even know. Yep.
Well,
that's
I didn't
us.
Know either,
right.
So.
But anyways, so if you're not using CastBox, here's the cool thing. Try it out because the show notes aren't optimized for CastBox either. But if you go on CastBox and you look at the show notes, the timestamps are highlighted, and if you click on them, you can jump to that segment.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would prefer that everybody listen to the whole show. But
me too. So I don't know why you're telling everybody to.
Well,
do that.
I also know some people are into certain parts and not other. I mean, we do a pretty long show here. So
yeah, that's true.
You know, some people aren't into the speculator part, and you know, so
or just really can't take our BS for 2.5 hours.
Right. So you can jump around by just hitting the show notes. So that I thought that was pretty cool and of note. But I still prefer you use the listen to the whole show. Let's see. What else do we got? You got anything else? I have a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Like I said, there's a lot of news this week, but we'll go through what you have and then
okay.
If I have
did
anything
you see
else.
The Hush trailer?
No.
No?
I didn't.
Oh.
I didn't have time to watch it.
Okay.
I saw that it was out there, but I didn't watch it.
Oh, it's really good. Really good.
Yeah.
It looks obviously that's one we'll do a show on.
Yeah, for
I'm
sure.
I'm very much interested in seeing that brought to life.
I am too. It was it's a great graphic novel or great, you know, comic series, so.
Yeah.
I look forward to seeing what they do with it.
Let's see. Oh, Last Night on Earth, which goes on sale May 29th, Black Label imprint, Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. Did you see that?
Right. So yeah, I've read that. It looks really great.
How
I
long
love
is that
going
to run? I don't have it in my notes. Is it six?
Six, I believe. Although, you know, I don't know. Going back to here we go again, I may be full of crap because a lot of the Black Label stuff is only three issues, so. That one might only be three issues.
Well, wasn't Batman Damned?
Three.
Well, have we gotten the third?
No, we haven't gotten the third yet. But it is three, and it's like Superman Year One is three, so
yeah, it's 348-page prestige format issues.
Right. Yeah, as I say, so it's now that longer. After I thought about it,
but that's the
most
of
the Black Label,
like,
yeah, it's
nice.
Been three.
Yeah,
because they're the larger format.
Yeah,
like magazine size and nice paper and
yeah, yeah, the nice stock. When you get it, you know,
like, when you get it. Yeah,
I'm sure issue three of, you know, Batman Damned is going to be glorious.
Oh, I hope so. It better be.
So the other one, did you see Boss Logic tweeting the rumors? He tweeted it today. Haven't done a rumor casting in a while. Starting to see Adam Warlock played by Zac Efron talk.
Have you heard that?
I haven't heard. That was the first
I've seen
I heard.
That, and I've also seen him as potentially Logan. You know, him potentially taking over as Wolverine.
Oh, wow.
I've seen both of those. Now, again, wildly speculative rumors, but I've seen both of them. I've seen both of those posted on Facebook or Twitter this week. I wouldn't mind seeing him in either role, but I think Warlock would be better.
Yes. Yes. You know, definitely.
I don't know. I think. And you know, we all said Michael Keaton couldn't be Batman, and you know, John Cryer couldn't be Lex Luthor. So I mean, anybody can be anybody. But I don't necessarily see him as Wolverine. But you know, you never know. I don't think they're in that stage of casting or thinking yet to be thinking about Wolverine. That's why it's probably way more of just a rumor than, you know, like I said, Warlock is somebody they might be talking about for Guardians 3. So it just seems a little bit more timely that,
yeah,
you know, that would be it.
Yeah, I didn't. It's funny. It's because if he plays Wolverine, I don't know if he's, and it's going to sound stupid, I don't know if he's big enough. Because if you look at him, of course he could put on size, because you look at what, you know, Chris Evans did, right. Chris Hemsworth did. But
right.
You just, even Hugh Jackman, you look at his early Wolverine to the ones later on, he got much.
He wasn't quite as ripped.
He was broader in the later ones, like a much larger size. And that's what we've come to know. And because Hugh Jackman's a big guy.
He's big. Well, but that's the thing.
The irony is Wolverine is small.
Right. He's actually too tall for Wolverine.
Right.
So Zac Efron, and I'm not saying he's super short, because honestly, I don't have any idea how tall he is, but it seems like stature-wise, he'd fit for Wolverine. He would, like you said, he would have to bulk up. Looking at the picture they posted for him, you know, to be Adam Warlock or whatever. I mean, the guy's pretty ripped, don't get me wrong. Like, he looks better than both of us, but
yeah.
But still, he's not bulky enough for Wolverine.
Right, but he could get there. But I just
think he could get there. I mean, look at what Zach Levi did for Shazam. I mean,
yeah.
You know, he put on a ton of size. So,
yeah.
He could definitely do it, but
yeah. So, there was a pretty cool conversation this week on Twitter between myself. It started off with a poll question of what's your favorite, by Mac and Goo podcast, what's your favorite platform for the X-Men? Did you see this?
I saw that.
And I said comics for me, then the movies, because, and then the conversation turned into, oh, well, when I grew up, this is what I would, and it was so, the conversation was Rob Paradis, Dr. Joe, and myself. Oh, and Pete jumped in too. Pete was in there. And basically the point of the conversation, the reason why I'm bringing it up now, is what we were all talking about really just seemed to be like, it doesn't matter what the material is. It's when you were a kid.
Right.
You know, and that's what pretty much what everybody was saying. It's like, and a lot of these guys, they were in the 90s. They were younger. They were like probably, you know, right, almost teenagers or in their teens.
I get it. We're old.
No, I know, but I'm just, but you know what I mean? It's like,
we look at
like, you know, Super Friends, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And
right,
and that to us is like, oh, you just can't beat that. And then
right.
It, we were talking about the X-Men series that came out in the 90s. It would come out in like 92. I'm getting ready to, you were married. I'm getting ready to get married. It's like I'm knee deep in my eyeballs trying to pay for that. I wasn't watching Batman, the animated series. I jumped in on that and I started it happened to be on when I got home. That's the only reason I was able to catch it. But it, you know, it's just funny how it's that childhood thing. And that's what grabs you.
That goes across a lot of things because, you know, who's your Flash? You know, for us,
like we said a couple of weeks
ago,
for
a lot of people, it's Wally West. Who's your Green Lantern? For us, it's Hal Jordan. For the 90s kids, it's John Stewart because of the Justice. So it goes with a lot of different, like same thing with Batman. For a lot of people, it's the animated series. For us, it was Adam West and, you know, and then Michael Keaton, you know, later on.
Well, it goes into your favorite soda too. Polar bears. That's why that Coca-Cola did that. They grab them as a kid and then you have that when you get older, you're like, oh, I remember as a kid drinking this. And it's like, but it's just funny. And you get into these Twitter polls and these guys we're talking to, they're, you know, listeners, friends of ours, whatever. And you have a civil conversation. But it is funny how some of these blow up and there's no right or wrong answer. You can't argue away somebody's childhood. It's like,
well, and you can't say just because if the comics were your favorite thing, then I challenge you, you know, those people to go back and read the Chris Claremont X-Men run with, you know, with Dark Phoenix and all that stuff and then come back and tell me that wasn't great, you know. So there's no right or wrong answer.
No.
Whatever it is unless you're talking about today's X-Men and then you're wrong because today's X-Men is pretty terrible. But but that segues me into something, you know, one of my news stories. I don't know if you saw Marvel was putting out a lot of information over the last couple of days about their big X-Men reboot that they're doing this summer. So, yeah, I know especially with Marvel and people have a really love-hate relationship with Marvel and their reboots. But this one is one that I can really get behind, I think, because the X-Men, they need this pretty badly, because the X-Books for a long time have gone from being, you know, really the flagship Marvel title of a joke, you know, they're really bad. So similar to, like, DC when Michael Bendis went over there and canceled all the Superman and restarted, Jonathan Hickman's doing the same thing with the X-Books this summer, and you know, this promises to be the course for the next, you know, 5-6 years, maybe even decade of X-Men. And again, just he's promising, you know, massive shakeups and, you know, a big change to the X-Men going forward. you know, as a writer, he's never disappointed. You know, I mean, everything he's done has been very well received and lots of fans are behind this guy. So I think it's pretty exciting and I'm really looking forward to it. So not to be promoting myself or any other comic store, but
that's what we do.
But I'm saying I don't want this to come off as self-serving promotion. I would say for any comic store, I would say you guys need to go out. You need to support this. House of X and Powers of X are the two miniseries that are coming out in July. I was actually putting my House of X orders in earlier this afternoon, and I'm going really, really heavy on this. I'm going to invest, you know, quite a bit into pushing this. So I think a lot of stores are going to do the same because this should be a great, you know, a great event, and hopefully, maybe bring the X-Men back to the, you know, the forefront where they should be. You know, I mean, you always had. I wouldn't necessarily say that X-Men were the flagship of Marvel because the Amazing Spider-Man is always right there too.
Yeah.
But, you know, X-Men were right there, if not number one. It's kind of like the Endgame Infinity War debate.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, one of them's number one and one of them's like one and a half or, you know, close right behind. And that's where they need to be because there's such rich characters there that deserve to be kind of treated right.
Well, so. If it almost feels like the X-Men have kind of been on the back burner for in both formats. They led the way with X-Men back in 99? I think right. X-Men came out.
So, right, 99 and then the early 2000s.
If you remember, and, you know, maybe we should do a podcast or two on those because I love those movies. And yeah. if you think much like the Star Wars movies, when those came out back in 99, that was huge. Right. And, you know, those broke new ground for, you know, because before that we had, what, Blade was the biggest yep. before that. So they led the way, and now since 2008, they've kind of been put on the back burner in the cinematic universe, and right. kind of the same in the comics. It kind of goes the way maybe the public opinion is going with the movies. And, it, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't comment too much on what Marvel's thinking is with the way they've handled
I hear that
these
a
characters.
Lot.
and then, you know, not to turn this into a bash Marvel session again, but, you know, going through my Marvel orders today, like I said, for the July books, I can't even count. I would have to take off both shoes, use both hands, and add some more fingers and toes to count the number of number
Your
one
iPhone
issues.
Your iPhone has a calculator.
Yeah, there's just so many new books coming out that it's just ridiculous how many books Marvel's flooding into the market that seem unnecessary. So I don't want these to get lost in the shuffle because I think these House of X and Powers of X will actually be worthwhile. But, I mean, kind of going back to what we were joking about earlier with, like, just throwing stuff against the wall to see what sticks. I really feel like that's Marvel's approach to publishing right now, is they're just, like, throwing a million books against the wall to see which ones stick.
Yeah.
And which ones are going to be good. You know, don't get lost in all the books that are coming out in July. There's a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
But these are
yeah,
two
we'll be
that
talking
I think
about
are
them
gonna,
as they get closer,
well, and we'll
too.
Talk about them. Many times between now and then, especially when they start coming up on FOC and things like that. But these are going to be the two that I don't think you want to miss. So,
cool. All right. One last small conversation. So did you see that WB or is saying the CW is no longer going to – their shows aren't going to be automatically on Netflix?
I saw that earlier today. Yeah.
So just another, like as I tweeted out, another glimpse into the changing streaming landscape. Right. I think on that note, I think WB is playing hardball. I think what they're doing is like, so they, Netflix signed a $1 billion deal. I don't know what, I read the article. I can't remember what year it was, but it covered everything. So they just got it automatically. Well, that deal's over now, so now it doesn't mean the shows aren't going to be on Netflix, but they're going to have to bid on it with everybody else. So it's going to be a higher competition. That's
maybe,
what the article
but I
was
think,
saying.
Right, and that may be, but I think it's just more evidence that Warner Brothers is, you know, moving into developing that, you know, their streaming service
Absolutely.
To be a rival for
Absolutely.
Disney Plus.
Yep.
You know, they know what Disney Plus has got going on. That's why I really think that the DC Universe is going to get folded into the Warner Brothers app. I think all the CW
Right.
stuff is going to get folded into the Warner Brothers app. And I think this is just another play. You know, it was fortuitous for them that the contracts were coming up when they were, and, you know, they
Well,
don't have to renew them.
Yeah, I think that's also their planning on when their app will come out.
Right.
You know, it's, I don't think it's, right. it's not a coincidence. It's just like, oh,
no.
okay, here we go. It's like,
right.
And
I'm sure, right. Obviously they've known for a while when
right.
these dates were coming
when the
up.
Contracts are up and,
but I think, I don't know how much insider news they had into what Disney was doing. And I think now that Disney has started making some announcements, maybe they're, I don't want to say they're shaking their boots at all, but they're probably really looking at what they need to do to their service to be competitive
right.
with Disney. And I think having all of their properties under one roof is – because, again, it doesn't make sense right now with the DC Universe, the way it's structured, that none of the CW shows are there, you know, that half the movies
right.
aren't there. It's not DC Universe if you're only getting half the stuff. And, you know, Disney Plus, you know, it looks like they're going to have everything. You know, certain things that are on Netflix are going to have to expire out before
right.
they can get them.
Right.
But I think Warner Brothers is moving that same way. And just another reason why I think Netflix is the one that should be shaking in their boots right now.
Right.
Of all of them.
Well,
because
yes and no. Because this leads me to the conversation that Pete and I had on Twitter. It was like he said I tweeted out something about Disney Plus gaining Hulu. Remember,
right.
Earlier in the week, it was Disney Plus is like, okay, they have controlling interest in Hulu. It's like 70% or something like 75%, right. But the last 25% can be bought out in 2024, whatever.
Right.
I'm not a lawyer. But anyway, so Pete tweets right away. He replies to that. He goes, I hate Disney. And I was like, why? And I was, you know, I'm like, I've heard that from a lot of people. But we had a really good conversation, and he was like, I just don't like big companies, like, overtaking everything.
Right.
And we went back and forth, and I understand his side of it because he, like, you know, he's thinking, like, mom-and-pop stores. He likes that kind of art. He doesn't want the art of the stuff that we like. He doesn't want it to be hampered by a big company. And he is right in a way that in like a big company like that could turn around and say, look, we're going to water everything. We're going to do it this way. And we want to get a message, whether it's political or whatever. They could, it hampers an artist if a big company is telling them what to do.
Right.
But I don't personally, he might be right, but I don't think that Disney would be doing that. They have too many things going already in different interests. You know, they do own Marvel, and Marvel's doing their own thing that would be, like Deadpool is Marvel.
Right.
And that doesn't fall under the Disney PG umbrella. But I think I think what Disney's doing with Hulu is they're just trying to get as much content as they can get so they can compete with a Netflix and stuff. Because when you sign up for the Disney Plus app, you're not going to get those comedians in those shows like Stranger Things. And so like Netflix, this is all good for in my opinion, this is what I said to Pete. I said, this is all good for the consumer because these people, these companies are all going to be working hard to get our dollars. And Gianna on Twitter said earlier about, today, she just said it like 2 hours ago, the new Aladdin commercial, she commented, she goes, I'll wait to see it on HBO. And I replied, I was like, yeah, I don't think it's going to make it to HBO because it'll end up on Disney Plus. And that gets to like a comment I made to Pete. It's like these shows like HBO or channels like HBO, they're not going to be where you watched your movie. Like when we were kids, you watched all your movies like Star Wars and Superman. You saw them on HBO.
Yeah, I don't know what movies they're going to have anymore.
No, it's all going to be
nothing.
No, HBO's going to turn into like ABC, NBC, and CBS.
Well, right, that's what I'm saying.
Original
I don't know
content.
What movies they'll have anymore. They won't. They'll only have their shows.
Because between Disney and WB having their own apps, is there any studios left?
Right. I mean, that's all.
I honestly
you go to
don't
HBO
know.
To watch your Universal movies, I guess. Or
well, who owns Universal?
I don't think Warner Brothers or Disney. But
they're not under one of those umbrellas?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, you're right. Everybody will be somewhere.
Right.
Even Universal, if they're not owned by somebody, at some point they're going to be like, well, we need to get in the app game too, so let's have a Universal streaming service.
And, right.
Right. Nobody's going to settle for HBO anymore. You know, they're all going to want their own.
Well,
piece
you
of the
will.
Pie, so.
And it's like, you see what HBO is doing. It's like Game of Thrones is about to wrap up this week.
No studios, I'm saying.
Right.
No studios
are
going to settle for HBO.
But but then you have Watchmen, so they're going to be getting our dollars for that. And it's like, you know,
which is DC. So that's weird, you know.
Yeah, but Warner Brothers doesn't have their
right.
thing yet.
They don't have their thing yet. So,
but it also doesn't mean that these studios won't sell out rights. Go ahead. You want to make a little movie about our product?
Right.
We'll sell you the rights. Knock yourself out. But it's like, I think Pete and I ended the conversation with the irony is we both come from a time when there were three channels for us to watch on TV.
Yeah.
And it's like, and now we went to all of these channels. Down to, we're coming back to possibly having five or six apps.
Right, we're going to be back down to three channels again.
Right. So it's kind of funny, but hey, it's all good for us.
Yeah.
I think. One last thing. Are you caught up on Flash and Arrow?
I am caught up on Arrow. I have not watched this week's Flash yet. I need to watch it tonight. But I did catch up on Arrow and Legends and Supergirl. I'm caught up on everything but Flash.
I'm only caught up on Flash and Arrow. Legends, I'm about halfway through the season. I saved that the rest for the summer. Right. Because that's just a fun show. But
yeah, so you watched Arrow?
Yes.
Interesting ending.
I really liked it. I don't want to spoil it. Maybe we'll do an Arrowverse show.
I don't want to spoil it either, but
there isn't much to spoil. But
well, no, there isn't much to spoil other than that we now know exactly what happens in the next season of Arrow.
No, we don't.
We know exactly where they get to.
Yes.
We don't see exactly how they get there, but we know the end already. So
yeah. Well, here's the thing, but now we're getting into oh man, do I want to spoil it?
Dude, this is a podcast about geek stuff.
I know.
I don't think everything is fair game.
All right, let me ask you this. Well, we all speculate that
if you cared about it, you had 2 days to watch it.
No. All right, let's do it. So it's
just
not,
don't spoil Flash for me.
Right, exactly. So but we've all known since the crossover event that
it was going to be
that
Christ.
Oliver traded his quote life, and right. That's going to be taken in Crisis.
Right.
Let me ask you this: if he traded his life, how is the Monitor? That's the Monitor, right?
Right.
How is he taking Felicity to see Oliver? He's not dead. He's somewhere. He had to
right,
go
he's somewhere.
Right.
He's somewhere.
So
we don't know where.
Die. He goes somewhere, and then.
Right.
But we now know that she is going to see him, and supposedly she can't come back. So it is
right.
The true version of a comic book death.
Right. We get to have like we know they get their happy ending, regardless of what happens in the next, you know, 10 episodes or 8 episodes or whatever there are next season.
Right.
We kind of know that they're going to get their happy ending, you know, together.
Right.
But we don't know where yet. We don't know if he's off world, if he's
well,
in
he has
reality,
to be, yeah.
If he's,
yeah.
You know.
And
hell, maybe he is dead and she's, you know, she's going to heaven to join him. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
Whatever.
We don't know. But yeah. I'm jumping ahead past the 10 episodes and I'm saying, the following season, Oliver shows up somewhere because they call him back from beyond to help out with another crisis. He shows up in the next crossover a year later.
I'd like to see it, but I don't know.
That's
yeah,
comic
I don't know
books.
If he does. Right.
And it's, you know, talking about, I had this conversation on Twitter as well about, like, I love the Arrow show. I love the characters. But it really is time for them to go.
It's time. Like, just the last half of this season, I've been kind of done.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like,
I'm a little bit rejuvenated now, just to see
and they
the
always
ending.
Do that to you,
but yeah, I'm ready for it to go.
Yeah,
like I'm kind of done with it.
And,
so,
and that's what I like. I love all the characters, but
right.
The story arcs are getting too redundant. There's only so many times you can have a bad guy solve the story, solve the mystery, and then wrap it up in 23 episodes. It's the same thing where it gets old with the same characters as much as you love the characters. So I think what they're doing with, you know, bringing in Batwoman, you're taking out Arrow, but those characters are still around. They're still going to pop in and out just like they did in the last episode. So the Arrowverse, and that's going to be the legacy of the show Arrow, is the Arrowverse. It created this
entire
thing.
Well, they all spun out, right. Everything spun out of it.
Right.
So
you think back to that when Flash first started. I mean, that was season 3 of Arrow.
Right.
When Flash had season 1. And it was, you know. So, anyways. All right. You got anything else?
No, I don't think so. We covered most of it.
All right. So, what am I going to spend my money on this week?
All right, so this is a pretty quick speculator and back issue section this week. There's not a whole lot of things going on. The two that we're going to mention, I bet you if I didn't say anything at all, our listeners could guess the two books we're going to talk about.
Immortal Hulk.
The first one is Naomi, issue number 5.
Yeah.
Came out today. So
I got to talk about that later.
As usual, just like issues 1 through 4, this book is hot. Selling for just a little bit over cover price. You know, like I said, by now, by issue 5, like I actually had plenty on the stands when I left today. You know, if we haven't figured it out by now, nobody's going to. So, you know, at this point, I think orders are meeting demand and it shouldn't be as hard to find. The only drawback to this now is for these last two issues, if you haven't been able to get your hands on 1 through 4, like these are really only going to sell to the people that have been able to get the first ones because nobody's jumping in to read the last two issues of a story. But that being said, I expect this to sell out and over the next coming days, and we'll probably still climb up probably to around the $10 range. This one here, and I haven't got a chance to read it yet, I was actually going to make it one of my recommended reading books for today.
Number 5?
Yeah, but that's why I didn't, because I figured...
But I did.
If you're already reading it, you know it's good.
I did. And we'll have a good conversation about it, I think.
And if you're not reading it, it's kind of like... Why am I going to talk you into jumping on for the last two issues? Well, but this one's supposed to reveal a lot about who Naomi is, and should be good. I'm looking forward to reading it.
Oh, you haven't read it?
No, I didn't. That's what I'm saying. I put it aside and I picked up Immortal Hulk instead.
Oh, okay.
And
all right, good. I'm interested in here. Well, I'll tell you about Naomi without spoiling it. And I'm going to try to talk. If you're not reading it, I'm going to try to talk you into reading it. So stay tuned.
My second book for the week, of course, is Immortal Hulk 17. Again, going for just a little bit over cover price. Same thing. At this point, you know, orders should be meeting demand. They shouldn't be nearly as hard to get. But this is one of my recommended reading books, and there is a little bit of a twist in this one. So it may still see some people picking it up. But once again, just like Naomi, when I left the store today, I had plenty of copies left on the shelf. So...
Yeah.
They shouldn't be, like I said, neither one of these should be super hard to pick up. But they're both worth long term. You know, they both have long term potential, so I would grab them. And that's it. There wasn't a lot of new books or hot books that came out this week that had people looking. So we're going to move into the back issue bonus books. The first one is the same, well, is the same book we talked about last week, Thor number 337. That's the first appearance of Beta Ray Bill. This one's still going up. Now, I think last week we talked about it hitting $100. Now they're pushing $150 just since last week. So, you know, when these things start heating up, I talk about it all the time. You got to figure out what your window is. You know, it's gone up $50 in a week. So if you want this book, you have to figure out when you're going to jump in and grab it. Because in a week, it's cost you $50. And if you still want this, next week, it's not going to be less. It's probably going to be two.
I wish people could see you, because you're like, you look like a father talking to his little kid looking at me right now. You're looking right at me, and you're like, you got the eyes at the top of the head, and you're looking at me like, I'm telling
you. I told
you
to pick it up
last
week.
I'm like, I'm sorry, I didn't do it.
So, and I think the last one that we talked about a lot that was like this were some of the Spider-Verse ones around when that movie was hot. And, you know, same thing then. You just got to figure out when you're willing to jump in.
Right.
And when the point is going to be just too high and you're not willing to go anymore. This book is not going to cool down anytime soon. So, again, just pick it up. And again, and I'm not saying this in a self-serving way. I don't have one that I'm trying to sell. I'm just saying if you want one, I'd get it now.
Yeah, people,
I wouldn't wait any
people
longer.
He's trying to save you money.
Right. I'm sure. It's kind of like I bought all these shoes, but they were on sale. Look how much I saved you.
My wife came home once with this painting from Marshall's.
Yeah.
It was a paint. She marries an artist. She comes
home
with,
buys paintings.
She comes home with a painting that was framed in glass. All... this huge, huge painting that was like, it was like 4x3. She goes, it was on sale for 50 cents. That doesn't tell you what it looks like.
Right. There's a reason why it was 50 cents.
I could sneeze on a canvas and get 50 cents.
Right. Oh. That's awesome. All right, so
next
book, Strange Tales, issue 169. This is the first appearance of Brother Voodoo. This is back up again. I'm not sure what the rumors for Brother Voodoo are, but I guess he's going to appear somewhere. It might be in the now that I'm thinking about it, I think it's in the Morbius, the
Living
Vampire
movie. Bring
in your
facts, people. We're bringing you the facts. He's going to appear somewhere. Next.
Yeah. But, you know, again, this time, you know, these are starting to go up again. Very good copies, which are not even, you know, those are just low-grade copies are hitting $150. So another one to jump on. If you're going to get it now. There's no reason to wait because it's going to keep going up. Lady Killer issue number one. So speaking of Netflix and shaking in their boots earlier, you know, we were kind of talking about what they're doing. For a while, we've been talking about Netflix kind of being the place for indie properties. So Netflix picked up this week the rights to all the Dark Horse catalog of books.
Yep.
They already had Umbrella Academy and Polar was the movie we talked about earlier, which are both Dark Horse. So a lot of the number one issues from Dark Horse are starting to see a little movement this week since that announcement. So Lady Killer issue one seems to be the one that has the most speculation for the next series that might show up on Netflix. Lady Killer is a really good book. I've read the first arc. Now they're in their big second arc now. I haven't read any of that. But this would be a good series, and I think it makes sense as a show. So right now these books are flying off of eBay for about $50. Second printing selling for about $12. So I'd get in. Now, again, this is pure speculation. We don't know for sure that this is going to be a show, but this is the one that people are really – kind of honing in on right now.
So,
but anything Dark Horse has potential.
That's what I was just going
to
say.
So Netflix is going to use it. Like, they didn't get that license for nothing. They're going to use it to start producing properties. So I would look at any Dark Horse number ones.
That's what I mean. So did Netflix buy rights just to all Dark Horse content?
Yeah.
So they have a contract with Dark Horse. That's it. Yes. Not with titles, with Dark Horse.
With Dark Horse.
Okay, cool.
Yes. They signed, just like recently they picked up Mark Millar and they got all of like the Millar world.
You know what I think is cool about that is that and we've said that many, many times. That just shows the level of passion that our fan base has, not Brightside, but comic books.
right.
You know what I mean? It's like, so Netflix is losing Marvel. DC has got their own thing going.
Right.
And so Netflix is like, we have to get comic book readers here. They will pay the money. And I don't care how we do it, but we have to get them here.
Right. And so they went out and signed a big Image, a big Image creator. And now, like I said, they just nailed down Dark Horse. Yeah. They did a great job with Umbrella Academy.
Yeah, that was my next point.
And Polar was really good. Again, I know we talked about it briefly. I don't know if you ever got a chance to watch it, but it was really good. So I'm encouraged, like I said, by what they could do with some of these properties.
Yeah.
And like I said, they didn't get the rights to sleep on them. They're gonna produce a bunch of Dark Horse. So I would try to go out there, not even just Lady Killer, but start looking for the number one issues of anything Dark Horse. I wouldn't necessarily – like Dark Horse did a lot of Terminator and Punisher – not Terminator, but Aliens and Predator.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily think those are going to be shows. I wouldn't worry about that stuff. But I would look at like their original content that they've put out and – Start picking those books up.
Yep.
And then Marvel Age number 97. This is the first appearance of Darkhawk. Again, I don't know what's driving this because I haven't heard anything about Darkhawk showing up anywhere in the MCU. But for some reason, you know, this book is on the rise again. $45 or so seems to be the going rate. A lot of people think Darkhawk's going to show up somewhere in the MCU. It's definitely not impossible, but I haven't heard any rumors of this, but in any case, whatever the reason, this book is moving a lot right now, so it might be worth taking a look at and seeing if you can pick it up. And cool. That's it for back issues.
Cool. Now we get to FOC.
It was pretty beefy this week. There's a lot of stuff on here to cover. I put a post up on my Facebook page with all these covers, and I put a tweet out. The tweet only picked up 4 of the 12 pictures that I tried to attach to it.
Well, so yeah, you can only do 4 at a time.
I guess Twitter has a limit. So
you didn't know that?
I didn't know it till the tweet went through and there was only 4 pictures on it.
Yeah.
but in any case, there's a lot of good stuff on FOC this week. So
did you put it out on Brightside?
No, I didn't. Just the Arkham Comics page. I was actually going to share it to the Brightside page.
Can we start doing that?
I can. I just wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Wasn't sure how you felt about me promoting that there. So
no, I think it's great because even if it's there and then we're talking about it, I don't. I mean, we can always.
Well, right.
Reference
and again, this
back.
This is not my FOC. This is just FOC. So it
right.
doesn't.
Right. Right.
Really, it's not self-serving. Really.
No.
But in any case, lots of stuff on here. So Batman Damned issue number 3.
I still care.
Right. Does anybody still care about Batman Damned? But the B cover, the Jim Lee cover, it looks really good. It looks like finally in about 3 weeks we're going to get Batman Damned number 3.
Nice.
The Batman Who Laughs issue number 6 has a Jenny Frison variant that looks really good. Catwoman issue 12, another Art Germ variant. I think he goes to issue 16 and then he moves on to, I think, Supergirl. So... This is a really cool. This is actually one of my favorite Catwoman ones that he's done. It really goes back to like the 40s style Catwoman in the purple costume. Looks really great, and that's my pick of covers for this week. Detective Comics 1005, Stepan Sejic. Justice League Odyssey number 10, Lucio Perillo. That's also a great. Jessica Cruz Green Lantern cover. I really like that one. Superman number 12, Adam Hughes, and Wonder Woman 72, Jenny Frison. So lots of variant covers from DC.
Cool.
Two new series from DC. We've got Event Leviathan, issue number 1 of 6. So this is the big event for DC this summer. There's lots of tie-ins to this. This has been building through Superman and Action Comics for a couple of months now.
Yeah.
Looks to be a good event, so several covers for that. Obviously, with a number one, there's a lot of options there. And then, just on the heels of Batman Damned number 3 ending, we get Superman Year 1, which is the next Black Label series, Frank Miller and John Romita Jr.
Yep.
And there's 2 covers for that. So both of those are on order due Monday as well. Jumping down to Image, we have Ride Burning Desire, issue number 1 of 5. This is an Adam Hughes series, so Adam's got his fans that follow him wherever he goes, so this one looks to be probably a pretty good seller for Image. And Sonata, issue number 1, is also coming out. Jumping down to Marvel didn't have as many variant covers available, but we've got Amazing Spider-Man 23. There's the 25th anniversary Acuna variant. This was a really good-looking cover also. And Champions number 6, the In-Hyuk Lee 25th anniversary cover. Also looked really good.
Yeah. I like that Spider-Man one.
It was really cool.
It reminded me
that
of
one
like,
did make my tweet.
Yeah. That's where I saw it. And it kind of reminded me of like a 60s.
It did. It's definitely, well, it's like I said, these are the 25th anniversary variants, so they're kind of throwback covers.
Yeah.
The Champions one, not so much. That's a little bit more of a modern day picture, but the Spider-Man definitely was reminiscent of, you know, 60s, 70s.
Yeah.
All right, and new series from Marvel, we get Silver Surfer Black, issue number 1. This is going to be a 5-issue miniseries written by Donny Cates. He's like the hottest writer at Marvel right now, so this one should be a good series. Tons of covers, some of them are ratio variants, so definitely go in and pull those up and take a look. And then Red Sonja, Birth of the She-Devil. This is from Dynamite Comics. There are five or six covers for this, but I think just the straight A cover by Lucio Perillo is the best of the bunch. It is an awesome-looking Red Sonja cover. And I think this is just a one-shot story, not a new series. But if you're a Red Sonja fan, there's a lot of good covers there. And that's it for FOC.
Cool. All right. All right. Let's get into recommended reading.
Yeah. So you want me to go first?
Yeah, I'm dying to hear about Aquaman.
Okay. So I went with a Marvel and a DC this week. Usually anybody that's listened for any amount of time, I generally try to pick an indie book in a number one issue. There just really weren't any this week. The only real number ones were War of the Realms books, and I know DJ talks about all of those, so I didn't feel the need to cover them twice. So I picked from DC Aquaman number 48. The reason why I picked this is Kelly Sue DeConnick jumped on Aquaman with issue number 43, yep. Right after the Drowned Earth storyline ended. That went through Justice League and Aquaman several months ago. She picked up and took over Aquaman, and it's been a very different take on Aquaman the last several issues. So her first story arc ended with issue 47. So this one here was the start of a new chapter. And that's the reason why I picked this one.
This is a good place to jump in.
It's a good place to jump in. I mean, you kind of would have wanted to read the first arc, but if you didn't, it's okay. I don't want to spoil it too much, but basically issue 43 starts with Arthur washed up like on an island. Very familiar trope, right? He can't remember who he is. He's got amnesia. Yep. He doesn't know what's going on, where he's been.
Happens to me all the time.
Right, me too. but it seems like a very tired comic book thing, but it was actually pretty interesting. Like Kelly Sue DeConnick, she's a really good writer. She's done a lot of great books, and there was a lot of excitement for her coming on to do Aquaman. And that first arc was pretty good, but you got to the end of it, and he still really hadn't figured out. He had kind of rediscovered some of his powers, but didn't really still know who he was and where the powers were coming from. So this one here kind of starts with him going on the next part of this journey of kind of re-self-discovery. So I liked it a lot. This was kind of trippy in a way. It was really kind of like one of those acid trip dream sequence kind of issues where he's kind of floating through like a dream state, but he's getting answers to the questions that he has from a giant shark. And I don't know who the shark is supposed to represent, but you know, obviously it's the ocean, so he's just kind of, it looks like he's floating around in this mystical ocean, and this giant shark is kind of revealing, you know, his past to him. And, you know, he's starting to figure out that he had this other life, and, you know, starts to see images of Mira and Atlantis and his parents and things, you know, because he doesn't remember any of these people.
Right, so he's getting it back.
So he's starting to get it back, and then it ends on a really big, really big cliffhanger.
Don't ruin it.
I'm not going to say anything at all, but it kind of ends with him kind of getting snapped back to, a lot of the answers are starting to come flooding back to him.
So 48 now makes you definitely want to grab 49.
Yeah. Yes, because now he has like this big memory, like this big thing.
Oh, cool.
That ends the book, and it kind of sets up, looks like what the next arc is going to be about.
Cool.
But, like I said, it's a good place to jump on if you haven't been reading in a long time. Aquaman has been one of my favorite reads for a long time. And this last arc, while I'm not going to say I didn't like it, but it was a huge departure from where he was as a character for the last, really going all the way back to the New 52. So I was just a little, I don't even want to say nervous, but I was just really unsure of where it was going to go. And now I think after this one, there's a little bit clearer picture on where it's going, but also a big question that I'm really dying to get answered. So I can't wait for the next issue to come out. So yeah, I really recommend it. If, like I said, if you haven't been a reader, now's a good time to jump on. And really, honestly, even the past issues like 43 through 47 shouldn't be difficult to pick up. I would say even go back and pick it up from the beginning of her run and try to read them. Cool. So that's Aquaman 48.
Cool. All right. My first one is, did you see this one? Last Stop on the Red Line, Dark Horse Comics.
I saw it. Yeah, I didn't actually have any copies that didn't go to subscribers. They all went in boxes, so
oh, okay.
I didn't take a look at it.
Yeah, the story by Paul Mayberry, art by Sam Lotfi. Lotfi, yeah. Color by John Rausch. Letters by Adam Pruitt. I went through all of the, they called them the players, but they even did credits that they did that at the beginning of the book, and then it ended, and they did it again. They credited
so like everybody. Watching like a TV show.
Yeah. It was pretty cool. It's like, and they write at the last page. It says a good creative team is worth repeating. So they went through everybody again.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. These guys, I don't know if they're all from Boston. I think Paul Mayberry. It's basically a trip on the Red Line, a trip.
Okay.
And I want to, it's very confusing. It's very dark. It's very crazy. It's kind of a very major twist on the Boston Strangler.
Okay.
Dark, mystical twist. Monsters instead of a human strangler. And it's weird. It is very okay. weird. But I got to say, for myself, I really want to see two because I'm hoping it explains some stuff from one. The art is, I would say, like assassination type art. I think I talked okay. about we talked about that in the past.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. The art. It's got some good color. There's no consistency to it, but that's kind of the story. The story kind of jumps around a bit, and that I think that plays to the like helter skelter type situation that the story is in. If you're into some like crazy ass stories, this is definitely a good one.
Okay.
And the weird thing is it opens up page one with I'll read you the quote. It opens up at the Boston Marathon in 2013 with the bombing.
Right.
And it says, I'm not sure which is scarier. And it shows a bunch of people at the barriers. And it says, when you see the monster, and then the next panel, it says, or when you don't, and it's all the people turning red. So it's pretty powerful, especially to people in Boston for something
right.
like that. But that's just that has really nothing to do with the story. It's more of like the story itself is talking about like, you don't see this coming. You don't know what's about to happen. So if you're intrigued at all by my description, pick it up because that'll probably be for you.
Well, let's speculate really quick on this because it's Dark Horse, you said, right?
Yeah.
Does it become a series at Netflix?
I don't know.
Should we go out and buy it because it's a number one issue?
I don't know because I don't know how you – it would be – an. So the feel I got out of this – is almost, if I could describe it, is it's like It, the movie It. It would be...
Well, you know, that made a few bucks at the theater, so...
Yeah, but it's that type of a... they show you what the... You need to read it to understand it. And I read it, and I still don't understand it.
Okay.
So, but I think that's what they're going for, unless it went way over my head. But I think that's what they're going for. It's like, it's very all over the place, and you don't see what's going on exactly. I had to read it twice, and I get the gist of it, and I know the next one, there'll be more, because it even says at the end something about, like, now you've met the characters, and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So, it's interesting. It's definitely interesting. I'm sorry, I'm putting you to sleep?
No. That was off camera. Nobody would have known if you didn't bring it up.
I just did. All right. What's your next one?
Mortal Hulk.
Haven't heard about 17. That one.
Yeah, we haven't heard about this in a while. Now, I haven't this... actually talked about
it. No, you haven't. Well, my next one's following right in line, so.
Okay. So, you know, this is kind of, unlike Aquaman 48, this isn't really a good jumping on issue if you haven't been reading it for a while. This isn't necessarily the one I would pick to jump on because it does pick up kind of in the middle of the story that we've been reading for several issues. But there was just a couple of cool things that happened in this book, and that's really why I wanted to recommend it. You know, honestly, if you're reading Immortal Hulk, this one's more of the same. You know, it's just a continuation of the story. But there's a couple of really interesting twists that happened in this that I liked. This issue really takes place with Bruce Banner. Like, there's not a lot of Hulk in this particular issue. He's trapped in a warehouse, not a warehouse, but like a military base, and he's trying to escape. And he's doing it all as Bruce Banner, because in the Immortal Hulk comic, Hulk only comes out at night. During the day, he can't transform. So, you know, that kind of goes back. Right, but that goes back to early Hulk. Like, when Hulk first came out, his transformations happened with day and night and not necessarily with rage. This Immortal Hulk kind of goes back to that feeling. So Bruce can't change, but he's still trying to escape. And what was interesting about it is different Hulk... So over the years, the Hulk has had different personalities. You know, you've had the Gray Hulk where he was intelligent and could talk, like kind of like Professor Hulk.
Professor Hulk,
you know, and then right now you have the Immortal Hulk, and then you've had like the Red Hulk. So in this, different Hulk personalities were manifesting through Banner in this issue, and he was taking on characteristics of those personalities.
Oh, cool.
Even without changing. But it just led to the idea that there was like schizophrenia almost, or like multiple personality, like multiple, yeah,
Sybil
like multiple personality disorders going on down there, where it looks like going forward, we may see different manifestations fighting for control of
Bruce.
Yeah. So that's what I thought was cool about this. There's a really cool page, like the second to the last page, that illustrates this point. I don't want to spoil it because it's a really cool image, so I don't want to give it away if you're not reading it. But it definitely illustrates the point that I was just making, that there may be some different things happening with the personalities of the Hulk going forward that were really cool. And then the last page is also a pretty big revelation that has to do with Rick Jones and some of the other characters that are a part of the Hulk that have been missing, and we kind of find out what's happened to them on the last page. So overall, that was a really good issue. Like I said, not a great jumping on point if you're not really reading it, but definitely still the series that I recommend highly. I know I've talked about it a lot where I don't know why the series is as hot as it is, and I still don't really understand why it's as hot as it is, but that I don't want to say that to diminish that it's actually a really great read, and it's been my favorite take on the Hulk in a long, long time. Because I feel like the Hulk is a hard character to write and make interesting, and they've really figured out a way with this series to make him very interesting to read.
Well, it's funny, they made two movies about him and they couldn't get it right. It's a tough character to write, and
he's very tough. And that's why I don't think you'll ever see another Hulk standalone movie again either.
Yeah.
You know, he's a great supporting character the way he's been used, but it's just very difficult to stand on his own. And you know, even in his series over the years, he's been difficult at times to keep interesting. But this series it doesn't suffer from that at all. It's been really off the wall, and a lot of weird things are happening, cool. Especially in this issue. So definitely I recommend reading it. You may be a little lost if you're not able to pick up the previous couple of issues, but at a certain point, like we always say, if you haven't been reading it, you got to jump on somewhere.
Exactly.
So just pick it up and start reading it, because this is probably one of the first issues in a long time that you shouldn't have a hard time walking in and picking up off the rack.
Yeah.
Because earlier issues have all sold out very quickly. So that's it for my recommended reading.
Cool. All right. My last one for this part of recommended reading anyways. Naomi.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to talk. If you haven't been reading it, I'm going to try to talk you into reading all of them. And I'm going with Jamal Campbell, the artist. Have you been reading it?
It's
amazing.
I'm not caught up to number 5, but I've read 1 through 4.
Okay. So, yeah, you're pretty caught up then. But you know what this artwork looks like.
It's awesome.
From page to page, it is so consistent. It is so good. The use of light that he uses, it's awesome.
Yeah.
There's, I think it was, what was it, issue 2 or 3, when she was with D in the garage and she had a flashlight.
Right.
And just the way that he illuminated the characters with the flashlight, it looked so good. It, you know, that's just one example. But this book, the story too, it's, if you haven't been reading this story from 1 to 5, it's a page turner. It's not action either. It's all story. It's all story driven. There's not like this, you know, it's story and temper driven, really.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Between her mother. I'm using air quotes, mother. So it's just a really good story, and by the time you get to the end of 5, and that it's a 6-story run, so I know we talk every week about these books being hard to come by, but if you can't find 1 through 5, grab them digitally and catch yourself up. And that, cause it's just worth it. It's a new character that, you know, Bendis came up with, and the art is, it's even worth looking at it digitally. It's just amazing. And it's such a good story that I think is going to be played on into when you get to the end of 5. You'll see. I think it's going to play big dividends into the entire DC universe, especially the way Bendis is talking about it.
It's been the big question, right? Like, this thing has been super hot, but the question is, would it remain hot if nothing happens with the character after this miniseries is over?
Right.
And, you know, after the first couple of issues, and like I said, I haven't read this one, but I have a pretty good idea. I mean, I know what it's about, and I know kind of what we're going to see in it.
But even after this issue, there's still tons of questions. There's going to more revealed in 6, of course.
Right, I'm sure. But the thing is, they've set her up now. The first couple of issues, you didn't really know what they were going to be able to do with this character after the miniseries was over. But
right.
By the end of 4 and 5 and 6, I think they're setting her up to where she will be a relevant character going forward
right.
in the DC universe. And that's what will keep these books relevant, because if this ends at number 6 and the character never goes anywhere, then the bottom's going to drop out on all those.
But
issues,
I don't think I don't think Bendis would do that. There's no way he would invent this character and get the hype that he's. That's the other reason I wanted to recommend it this week, use it in recommended reading this week, is when 6 is over, I think we can do a podcast on it. That can be our topic.
Yeah.
I know there's going to be a lot to talk about that we could talk about for a little while. And
right.
for our listeners, like I said, I think it's going to be big in the DC universe. And the artwork, if you're into comics for artwork, this is definitely something to look at.
Yes.
So.
Yes, very good.
All right. That'll do it for that. You ready to get into War of the Realms?
Ooh. I am. So before
what
you get into, well,
you
before you
know?
Get into, before you get into this week's War of the Realms book.
Okay.
I did read last week's Journey into Mystery #2, and I don't want to start another, like, endgame debate going back and forth with you.
No,
but,
I think
you know,
agree with you.
I have to be different. I thought Journey into Mystery #2 was a really good book. Like,
oh, okay.
You really didn't like it that much. And I saw a couple of tweets that. Actually kind of enjoyed it. So
what did you... I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it. I just don't think on the scale of the other War of the Realms stuff, I don't think it's as good. It's not as action-packed and entertaining.
Well, it's definitely not as action-packed.
That's all.
I thought it had more... Like, I thought the whole things with the... I thought the whole Skrulls thing at the RV camp was great. Like, I really liked that whole storyline. With the
mom and pop.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so funny. You got to tell me what that one was about, because I've read them all. So I'm like, okay, which one are we talking about?
Yeah, like all the Skrulls, all the Skrulls were, you know, they're like, oh, they figured out we're here hiding. We have to kill them all. And then the baby comes out and they all revert to their old grandparent personalities. And, you know, I don't know. I just thought it was a lot of fun. I thought the whole thing with, like, you know, the baby diaper and I don't know. Like,
but you take
it was
that
fun.
In-
So, I just, like I said, I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun with it. I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to, we don't have to get into a big debate the merits thing with it, but I just, like, I have to be different, and I liked it, so.
No, but that's the thing. I'm not saying I didn't like it. I'm saying that it's not on par with, like this week with, I think it was Strike Force.
Yeah.
That one was awesome. And it had humor, it had action. It was just, compared to that, if you read those two back to back, they're not the same.
Yeah.
They're not, you know what I mean? And it's like, and so if I'm going to recommend it that day, and there's a lot of books here, you know?
Oh,
so
there's a
like,
ton for today. Yeah.
No, I know, but in the entire War of the Realms, it's like, I can't put it all up. That one I wouldn't put up there. Kind of like what the movie we're going to talk about today. I really like the movie. But it's at the bottom of the Star Wars universe. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's kind of how I was looking at that one. It also depends on what I read that day, because when you're reading a bunch of them in a row and you get to that one, you're like, oh, that one's not as entertaining.
Yeah. I don't know. Actually, I just wanted to put it out there to anybody that may have said, I'm not going to read it. I'd give it a chance.
You liked it.
I liked it. Yeah. I thought it was good, so.
But
it's definitely, like I said, it's not required reading for the War of the Realms story.
Right.
But it was worth the read. I liked it.
So for this week, I would put Spider-Man and Giant Man in the same category of, you don't have to read them. I really like Spider-Man because I'm a Spider-Man fan.
I just love Spider-Man running around with an Asgardian helmet on.
Yeah. And what's funny is in this one, he doesn't wear it.
Oh, okay. I saw him on the cover, but what was the last one where he was wearing it? Something last week.
In all of them.
Yeah.
He's wearing it in all of them, and it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But in this one, so in the opening pages, Thor gives him the assignment, and he's like, me? Why me? And they go on from there, much like in Giant Man, they get all the... Giant men get the assignment,
right?
To go to what is Florida, and where the Frost Giants are now. They took over Florida.
The Frost Giants are in Florida,
right? That's so awesome. they have to go to there. They have to go there and infiltrate that. And it's basically this: the entire story is them getting together.
Right.
It's funny. There's some good humor in it, but the action doesn't pick up until the end. So you're really not getting action until the next one. So, you know, if you want to pick them up, they're decent, but they're not essential.
Okay.
Obviously, War of the Realms 4, that's essential if you're reading War of the Realms.
Yeah, I would guess so.
It's a good story. It keeps it keeps the whole thing going, as I said today. But the highlight for me today was Strike Force, the War Avengers. It's a riot. You've got Deadpool in there. He's, you know, just his running commentary is a riot.
Right.
And then the action is really good. One thing I thought was weird about it, though, is it actually took place before 4. So, like, I got all my books today. I went out, and, of course, I read War of the Realms number 4 first.
Right.
And some stuff happens. I'm just like, okay, I'm like, oh, maybe I missed that. And then I read Strike Force and I see, oh, read War, you know, this.
Read War, yeah.
Yeah, it actually kind of takes place like right before it. I didn't know that, but yeah, it's, so definitely pick up Strike Force. And I think, is that a one-off? In 2 weeks. Is that a one-off? Yes. That's actually a one-off. It says the end at the end of it. So, but it's definitely worth it. So, and did you read anything else this week? Did you read Batman 71?
No, I didn't. I only read those two that I talked about.
Okay. Batman 71, really good. TIE Fighter 2, really good. Star Wars, Age of Rebellion, Boba Fett, really good. What else we got here? Oh, Savage Avengers. You read that, didn't you?
I read issue one.
Yes.
That's all that's out, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that
I did
came out
read
last
that.
Week.
I liked it. Yeah.
Yeah, I just actually read it this week. We had some listeners comment about it, so I picked it up.
Yeah, it was really good, actually.
Yeah.
I liked
it
quite a bit.
Yeah, it's dark.
Yes.
For an Avengers story.
Yeah, but look at the characters.
Well, exactly. You got that Conan, so.
Right.
And but for an Avengers story, it's having that dark feel, that Conan feel, I thought it was really good.
Right.
Really good. I like that one. All right. I read so many books today, it's not even funny. But all right. Are you ready to get into this?
Sure.
All right, let's do Attack of the Clones.
All right.
All righty. Let's start at the beginning. Going into this movie, what were you thinking?
Going into it the first time I ever saw it, or going into it Monday
Well, yeah,
night?
Let's do that. Oh, you watched it Monday?
I watched it Monday.
I think I did, too.
Well, yeah, because that's what reminded me that I needed to watch it. Otherwise, I would have completely completely forgotten, and we wouldn't have anything to talk about.
Oh, no, I did Hellboy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Be honest with you, I don't know what my thoughts were going into it 20 years ago. I don't remember. So,
really?
Yeah, I don't. I was excited for Star Wars. Like, I enjoyed Episode 1, you know, when it was released.
Yeah.
It hasn't aged well, but... I saw that, like I said, I mentioned it, I think, when we did that podcast. I saw it in the theaters at least 7 or 8 times, maybe more.
Yeah.
You said I watched 13. It a lot. Well, it might have been. I don't even remember. It was a lot.
I re-listened to that podcast, and it's like, you were like, I saw that movie 13 times in the theater. And I was like,
wow. It probably could be, because there was days where I went and saw it, and then I came out, and I went right back in and watched it again. So I was excited for Star Wars, and I'm sure I was excited for this movie. You know, going into it,
right?
I didn't have any reason not to be. So, I'm sure I was happy to go, happy to be going.
So that opening scene when the ship comes in, as you know, they always start out with a ship flying over that, but they do the whole Queen, Amidala switcheroo,
right?
Again, they open right up with that. Her ship blows up,
right?
What are you thinking there? Like, what? Back in, what'd that come out in 2002?
Right.
That's what I'm talking about. That, what were you thinking then? Like, were you like, yes, here we go? Or, cause I think today, a lot of people are looking at this, it doesn't play the same. And that's why, you know, I've had many debates about this with people of all different age brackets, mm-hmm. of what this movie means and how it plays today. And it a lot of people don't like it, but I like the sets. I like in that opening scene to me is it was reminiscent of like when they first landed. I thought it was reminiscent of Empire when they landed on Cloud City.
Well, right. Well, like, I guess I'm trying to figure out what you're trying to get at, but I guess if it starts and you're right into it, and that was, like you said, kind of the way Empire was, because you didn't need the setup. You already had it with Star Wars, and this was kind of the same. We had the setup with, now I'm going blank on the first movie. What the hell was it called?
Phantom Menace?
Phantom Menace, yeah, I'm blank. Yeah, it was going completely blank. We had the setup. Like, we met all the characters, so they didn't need to introduce us to anybody with this one. So it just picked up with action, and it stayed all the way through, really. Like, I enjoyed this movie watching it this week a lot more than I thought I was going to, because I was expecting, I went into it with a little bit of negativity because, you know, I don't recall it fondly.
Yeah.
You know, but I actually really enjoyed it watching it this week. I think it's a better movie than people give it credit for.
Right.
There's a lot of problems with it, and I'm sure we'll go through some of them as we go along. But overall, I think it had a pretty solid story, and I think it advanced a lot of things forward, which is what you want a movie to do.
Right.
You know, it gives us the Clone Wars, which we had only ever heard of in reference.
Exactly. That's, I was going to get to that later, but we can talk about it now. It's that whole scene. Well, this scene.
That's what your uncle told you. He didn't hold with your father's ideals, thought he should have stayed here and not gotten involved.
You fought in the Clone Wars?
Yes. I was once a Jedi Knight, the same as your father.
That scene right there paid huge for people like you and I.
Right.
When this scene happened with Yoda.
Victory, you say? Master Obi-Wan, not victory. The shroud of the dark side has fallen. Begun, the Clone War has.
And then after we heard that, that was amazing.
Right.
And that to me, that loses so much to people that aren't our age. You know
right.
what I mean?
Because here's the thing. When George Lucas wrote Star Wars, it wasn't even called A New Hope. It was just Star Wars, in, you know, back in the early 70s, like whenever he wrote it.
Right.
I think the Clone Wars was just a throwaway line. It was just something that introduced where Obi-Wan would have known Leia's father. And that was it.
Right.
It was just a thing. And then as he's crafting his universe backwards, the Clone Wars became something very important and very relevant to the story.
That one particular scene, I have a couple of points on that. One of giving me goosebumps right now. But that line of the Clone Wars almost became mythical with people like us who like wonder
right.
what were the Clone Wars? What were those? Like what are clones?
Right.
This is the 70s and 80s. We didn't even know what a clone was.
Well, and then especially since through the rest of the original trilogy, you never saw a clone.
No.
Like, there were no clones in that universe. So it just kind of made you wonder, like, what were the clones?
We didn't even... Do you remember, like, when we were little, and obviously I didn't know you in 78.
Right.
70, between Star Wars, A New Hope, and Empire, we didn't talk.
Right.
But I guarantee you, you had conversations like this. What are stormtroopers?
Right.
Are those robots or are those people?
Exactly. I never knew.
We never knew.
Right.
All we knew is they had horrible aim and they just died all over the place.
Although, now thinking back on it, it's like, how would we not know they were people? Because if they were robots, then how did Luke and Han jump into their clothes?
No,
you know
exactly.
What I mean?
But we didn't know.
Right.
We didn't know. We had no idea. And we would, you know, we would try to rationalize as little kids. And when I say little kids, we're like 10.
Right.
Well, 9 or 10 years old.
I was seven when that came out, in the years in between these conversations.
These are recess conversations. And you're like, well, you just rationalize. They got to be robots because you can't kill that many people.
Exactly.
You know?
And then, like you said, at 7, I didn't know what a clone, I didn't even know what a clone was. So.
Exactly. I don't think my parents knew what a clone was
right.
then. So, you know what I mean? It's like, so that small little line created this, paid off for people like us.
Right.
And the other part that I was saying that gives me chills is that one scene is coupled with probably the most powerful scene in all of Star Wars movies to me is that first time Luke lights the lightsaber.
Right.
That's in Obi-Wan's living room or whatever that was, right?
Right.
And that noise till the day I die is like,
right.
You just, there isn't another one like it. And it, that, that just one little scene, it all gets encapsulated into this one movie where, like you said, a lot of people, it doesn't play the same. And I understand that. That gets back into the conversation we had earlier about our childhood, people's childhoods and stuff. I get that. And there are holes in this movie, but that one scene to us, it's just, it makes the movie.
And it also opened up so much of what comes after that's now canon in Star Wars. Like, this movie, there's a lot of stuff that this movie sets up. Like, all the Clone Wars TV shows. That whole series takes place
By the same name.
But it takes place between this movie and the next movie.
Right.
Like, you know, all that stuff is being... There's so much material that got mined out of this movie that became canon. And as much as people don't like this movie necessarily, everybody loves the Clone Wars TV. Like, everybody loves those shows. And none of that mythology exists without this movie being in place.
Well, and that's why when we did Phantom Menace, I would put Phantom Menace last, and this one would be second to last to me. Because I always felt like I enjoyed Phantom Menace, but all of that Senate talk.
Right.
And I would say the part of Clone Wars that I would put in the Senate talk would be the love story part.
Right.
They kind of overdid that for my taste, but I also understand what they had to do because it's that love story that isn't supposed to be taking place.
Right.
That's what sets up Episode 3.
Right.
But when you're sitting through it, the first time I watched it, I was just like, oh, wow, you didn't care. You were just like, oh, here we go.
Right.
But then when you're watching it again and again and again, you're like, okay, let's get through this.
Right.
You know. So that to me, the love story is the part that doesn't play as well late in multiple viewings.
Right.
But it is still essential to the story.
I mean, it's not all roses, right? Like, there's the issues with this movie. Hayden Christensen is terrible. There's no other way to say it.
Everybody says that, but
he is terrible. I don't want to follow the masses, but even as I watched it again Monday night, he is terrible. Like, he's a horrible actor. Here's the other big issue I had with this. We all know that, like, we know the end of the story, right? We know Anakin becomes Darth Vader.
You're like that devil on my shoulder when I'm watching this. When I'm watching the movie, I'm like, I can hear you already every time he says something. And I'm not saying I don't agree with you, but I'll say the same thing I said to you in Phantom Menace. Mark Hamill, as much as we love the guy.
He's not a great actor either.
He's a pop culture icon. Right. But go back and watch those movies and you're like, but I don't want to do this.
He's the most feared man / robot / whatever in the galaxy, right? He terrorizes, he kills, and this and that. He is such a whiny bitch in this movie. I'm sorry, I can't think. There's no other way to say it.
You're right.
There is no way that I buy Darth Vader whining and moping. Like, yes, Luke was whiny too, but he didn't become Darth Vader.
No, he defeated Vader.
Well, right, but he could still be whiny and defeat Vader.
Right.
But
you know what's funny to counter that, and I agree with you because when you're watching it, and I was just thinking, I'm like, hey, it's just like Luke, whatever, like father, like son.
Yeah, but
here's the thing: if this is going to sound really sad, especially for an actor, if Hayden's listening right now, he embodies the role though. Like, if you just turn the volume down and look at him, it's like. Like that scene when he's saying goodbye to his mother at the gravesite and him standing there in like the cloak and everything, you're just like, that's Vader. He has the stance of him. And maybe that's how they cast him. They're like, don't even bother speaking, doesn't matter.
You stand like David Prowse, so you're hired.
Yeah, so I really felt like watching him move around, you could see he was Vader-esque. But yeah, he's whiny. He's conflicted. But that's the role. But I agree with you. But it doesn't ruin the movie for me.
It doesn't ruin it for me either. You know, because Natalie Portman's acting is terrible too. Like, both of them
right.
were
Yeah, you
were
didn't
horrible.
Like her in Phantom Menace
Yeah,
either.
They were horrible yeah. in this movie, both of them. And I know we're jumping around a lot, you know,
which
what
we do.
We tend to do, but, and I'm going to sound like a really old man now, but,
oh,
like,
boy.
Did they have to, like, rip her shirt off so that her belly was hanging? Like, do we have to get that gratuitous in our Star Wars? Like, why does that have to First of all, that doesn't happen. Like, if you fall out of a whatever and roll around on the ground, your shirt doesn't rip like that. You
no,
know?
she got ripped
However
by the
was.
Tail of one of those
That's
creatures.
Right. But it's like,
it whipped her.
But very conveniently turned her shirt into a halter yeah. top. And
I got to come up with a conveniently sounder yeah. for you. conveniently.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, if it went anywhere else, it would have been rated R.
Not to go off track, but yeah, I don't know. I was watching something with my wife the other day, too. I can't even remember what it was. But as I was sitting there, I was like, oh, well, that's convenient. maybe I use that a lot. But
maybe.
But I don't know. Like, that even, I don't know why that bothered me, because I don't think it bothered me 20 years ago, because I'm sure I loved watching her run around with her belly hanging out.
Well,
but
right.
it's just, as I was watching it, I'm just like, why is that there? Like, I don't understand why we're seeing that. Like, there's no reason at all for it. It's completely gratuitous.
And you read these comics?
Well, I know.
Yeah,
but
so.
That's what no, I'm saying. I know I sound like an old man saying that, but it really felt out of place. Like, for some reason, it felt out of place. Like, I just didn't feel like it belonged, you know.
Well, no more than Leia.
I know you're
going
to go to the slave Leia. Yeah, you're going to go to the slave Leia
yeah, like,
thing, and I agree with that too.
Yeah.
But at least there, you can kind of understand, like, she's
really?
A slave. Well, but I'm saying, like, in the context, everybody in the palace were dancing for him. They were all dressed.
That's true.
Kind of
yeah.
dressed that way. And yes, obviously it was gratuitous too, but at least they wrote it into the story where it made some semblance
right.
of sense. Where
right.
in this, it was just like, hey, we're just going to rip half her clothes off for no reason.
Well, they just ripped off her midriff. It wasn't right. even as gratuitous as Leia, but
no, it wasn't. I don't know. Like I said, for some reason, it felt out of place to me.
Yeah.
I don't know why it.
So,
like I said, when we discussed Endgame, certain things just pop into my head and I don't know why, but that was one of them.
I have a feeling I know. Let's move on to something that I thought was a little bit more positive than that. Is,
okay.
What'd you think of, like, the sets, the backgrounds, the set pieces?
I thought
I really liked them.
I thought they did a really great job. I thought, like, Geonosis was awesome.
Yep.
Watching
yes.
that again. And I'll tell you one thing, too. Now, there were certain scenes, and I'm sure you picked
the
them
rain.
Out, too. Like, there was a lot of scenes where you could definitely see the, like, the painted sets. Like, there was parts that really stood out as being obviously, like, the production was bad. But
no.
There's a couple of scenes in the Jedi Temple where
oh.
you could tell where they were walking, and they're like, the couch ahead of them was painted on the wall, like it wasn't even there.
Yeah.
But by and large, I thought the effects held up really
yes.
well in this movie.
So,
like, as I was watching it, the CG, you know, because we've come so far since then.
Yeah.
But everything really felt still pretty good.
Star
to me.
Wars.
Yeah.
I felt I felt like it was definitely great Star Wars universe.
Right.
Like, even the scene when Obi-Wan and Anakin first show up to protect her.
Right.
And she first sees Annie for, you know, after 10 years.
Right.
And just walking around that, like, apartment or whatever they're in, and the background, looking out the windows.
Right.
And looking at all those sets and, you know, the furniture, the Star Wars furniture and all
right.
that. I just thought it was just the color contrast. Like, you have the blue background, but the interior
right.
is orange. So I just thought the way they did everything. And then, like you said, like Geonosis, and you're seeing the clones.
Right.
The,
like
you said,
it really
and
held
it's like,
up.
It was, you know, and they're like, what did they say? Like, they have 200,000, but
ready,
more than a million ready to go, you know,
right.
on the way.
Yep.
And they do it. And then the timeline, this isn't the sets and stuff, but we'll segue right into the timeline. That's the other part that I really like about this movie, that there's conversations to be had of what is going on?
Right.
Like, how did this happen? Like, Dooku is like, he's talking about, he's saying one thing, but then by the end, you're like, no, wait a minute. He doesn't even know about the clones.
Right. Well, that's the whole thing. Like, who was, Like, who is Sypha Diaz? Like, exactly. We don't really know. Like, why were these clones being created in the first... Like, was it all... I guess my question is, was it all designed by the Emperor? Or did the Emperor discover this plan and then start to warp it to his own goals?
No, I think the Emperor did this plan. This has been going on. This goes back... And this is why I think this movie is so pivotal, in that it's... The first one, you've got those little nuggets about what's, you know, the Senate and how this kind of the wheel starts to go in motion. But in this one, you find out this wheel has been in motion long before
for a
that
long time.
Because you go by the Sypha Diaz, he ordered the clone army, and we don't know when, but we know he died 10 years ago.
Right.
And 10 years ago was the Phantom Menace. So this is all put in place long, not long before, but at least at that time.
Right.
Like if he ordered them 10 years ago and then died the next day,
right,
at least we have that timeline.
Well, but that's the thing too, is like we don't know, like at what stage are the clones birthed, I guess? Like are they birthed as infants or are they birthed as 8-year olds?
Well, they say it in it. They're birthed as infants, but they can double the maturity rate. So it takes them to get to like, so the ones that they were showing were the first production line. So
right,
they look to be about 20 years.
Right. So how
they're
old
about
were
20
they?
Years
ten,
old.
10 years of.
It takes 10 years to make a 20 year old.
Okay. So
and they said, remember they showed the kids that looked to be about 10 years old and he goes, these ones were produced 5 years ago.
Right. Okay.
So that kind of, and he says they've doubled the, they doubled the birthing rate. And that's why they said we have 200,000 ready to go now, which means 10 years ago.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. That means they probably started 10 years ago.
Right. So, and if they're doing 200,000 a year for 10 years, you could see that's where you're getting your numbers from. And now the clones are ready to go, and that's creating that army. But if at the when this all wraps up at the end, and of course we're jumping around, you have Dooku and the Emperor talking, saying, like, the Emperor knows both sides.
Right.
They're creating a one side, one person's creating a clone army, which was Sypha Diaz, who was apparently an apprentice at the time. And now you have Dooku creating the droid army, all for the Empire, but now they've got them going against each other. But we know now that the clones eventually go bad. Yeah.
Right. And that's the whole thing. Like, at a certain point, the Emperor is playing both sides.
Right.
Like you said, we all know that at some point it's going to switch and he's going to have it all. But, that's why I'm saying, like, again, I don't want to gloss over the issue because there are issues with this movie. Like, it's not a perfect movie, but it really has a lot going for it that set up everything to come after it. Like,
yeah,
I don't know, the overall story I thought was very solid. Like, I know the biggest complaints with the first one was that, you know, well, nobody cares about the Senate, it's all about trade talks, and, you know, nobody cares about that. This movie didn't have any of that. Like, it was very much
it just had the love story that
you wanted, but this was,
you know,
really very much like
the
Empire
Strikes Back. The
romp in
the field.
It was like you know, it was all action, it was all story. Like, I don't know why this one gets as... I can see why people didn't like the first one, and I can even see why they didn't like the third one. But I don't see why this movie gets as much of a bad rap as it gets, because I feel like overall the story was solid. It set up a lot of important things going forward.
Right.
Because, again, if you don't have this movie... Like, if we didn't get the Clone Wars and we didn't flesh all that out, like, I don't know what these trilogies become without all of that stuff. Like, that was pivotal stuff that, you know, went forward. So
I wonder if in December, if we're going to be coming back to this movie, if this is going to get referenced because of what we're saying and how much they have done just by producing the TV show. Even Lucas and the powers that be have recognized how much information is in this movie.
Right.
So is that going to, because we are speculating the Emperor is showing up in right. December. So are we going to be coming back, looking back at this, in this trilogy?
We could
really
be.
Because that's probably, when you're telling a story, one of the ultimate things you can do is you wrap it back to the beginning.
Right, you want to tie it all in a nice big bow and,
right.
you know, put it and together.
So, to me, it's like, that's what makes this so, you know, entertaining.
Well, that's the thing, because, you know, we haven't seen episode 9 yet, obviously, but that's the task, that's the biggest task that JJ has, right? It's like, he's got to... And, you know, not my opinion, just what's out there, but he's got to undo all the wrongs of Last Jedi, and he's got to undo all the wrongs of the first trilogy. So his job is to somehow tie it all in and make it all relevant so that somebody can say, well, now it all makes sense.
Right.
Like, and I don't know if he can do that, but that's what his task is. Like, that's what people are expecting him or hoping he's going to be able to do. Is
right.
make everything relevant. Can he pull
an end game?
Right. Now that's the thing, is if he can or not. We don't know, because we haven't seen it. But,
right. Well, that's end game did 21 movies. But he's got to take, what he's trying to do is, when I say an end game, it's you turn around and make, oh, wow, I want to go back and see that movie now. Right. I want to see that movie now. And you
want to
watch it all again.
Right, it's kind of like Endgame bringing Thor the Dark World back into... that's the movie everybody crapped on in the MCU, and now all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, I have to pay attention to Thor the Dark World now. So we could be saying, you're right, at the end of this, I have to go watch Attack of the Clones now because something happened. I don't know what that would be, but... It could be there, you know.
Well, that's the point of it. Right. It's, you know. I really liked... What'd you think of the special effects? And I really, really liked that lightsaber battle at the end.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Well, I touched on it earlier. Like, I thought the effects were really good. Like, I think they hold up today.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's definitely some painted set pieces and things that I could pick out while I was watching it. And, you know, I don't know how you watched it. I watched a DVD copy. Like, I didn't even have a Blu-ray of this.
Oh,
so
I got the Blu-ray.
I watched a DVD copy on my
4K
75-inch TV, and maybe that's
why
it stood out. But the quality still for a DVD was pretty good. Like I said, I thought the special effects were great. Yes, the lightsaber battle goes down, other than the Darth Maul with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan battle from the last movie, this is probably the best one we ever got.
That's what I was going to say.
Know, it's really, really good.
I really... Again, going back to our youth, and when Yoda... Which, now, I actually thought like you. I have little John Devil on my shoulder. So I thought, everybody thinks it was, and I did at the time, and I still do today, Yoda grabbing his lightsaber without grabbing it. But how much cooler would it have been if he just opened his arms up and his robe opened up on its own, too?
Right.
But one hand has to open the robe, but the other hand doesn't have to grab the lightsaber. That's my little John Ciccone moment.
Well, my other John Ciccone moment is that he hobbles in on a cane.
Well, that's
and then
humor.
He has this awesome lightsaber battle, and then he picks up his cane and hobbles back out. It's like,
dude, you can walk.
you
can hover.
Obviously, you can bounce around like you got beans in your pants, but
yeah. But I get that. That's for the whole.
Yeah,
you know,
but still, it was. Awesome.
I've got it when I need it, but I'm just going to hobble around. But that, when he comes in, and first you have, you know, of course you have Anakin losing his temper and his arm.
Right.
And so he goes in, and then Obi-Wan almost gets crushed. But the battle between them, that was that was a really good lightsaber battle.
Yes.
Between the three of them. But then when Yoda comes into the room for us, I mean, that...
The first time,
you know,
it was awesome.
We never saw anything like that.
Right.
We just knew that he could lift an X-Wing.
Right.
That's all we knew. So, it's... And then to see that, and even in episode one, you didn't get to see anything out of Yoda. You just knew he was a younger he was still old. He was still 800 years old.
Right.
But, you know, instead of being 860, he was like 810.
40. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, okay. But yeah, so for him to come in and that lightsaber battle, I think it's, obviously we're going to go through all of them, but I know this one's fresh in my mind, but it is, it's got to be one of the top lightsaber battles we've seen.
Yes. Like I said, I think only second to the Darth Maul battle.
I don't know. I really like that one. Yeah, I do.
No, which one?
I do.
Which one?
I think this is better than
the
Maul.
You think it's better than the Maul one? I don't
know.
Yeah,
because you know why? The Maul one, it didn't have as... Well, one, you don't have the power of a guy like... of Yoda.
Right.
That's just... You know, that was a moment that we just had. But the Darth Maul one was good, and you had the double-ended lightsaber. But it's still... I just thought that the action in this one, the way they shot it, the way the lights... You know, when Anakin slices the cable, and then it gets dark... So you have the flashes of light, and they're right. you can only see them by their lightsabers. The way it was shot, I just thought it was so much the score,
that's what I was going to say. The score was better in the Maul one. Like, to me, what made that battle so good was the score. I mean, the music was awesome, and just that whole you know, they're in the middle of the battle, and then they kind of get cut off. And they have to sit and stare at each other and wait. And it's like, there was, I don't know, something about that. That's what made me go back and see it 13 times. It wasn't because I loved the movie so much. It was because of that damn lightsaber battle. I guess, you know, I'd have to watch them side by side to see. I don't want to take away from this one because it was really good, too.
I mean, we're splitting hairs.
Yeah, but they were
both really good.
They were both really good. But yes, I think these two movies give us the two best battles we get through the whole franchise. Nothing else really beats that.
I think it was they're both better than the Obi-Wan Anakin battle in episode 3, which I still really liked.
Yeah.
But they're better than that. Right, I just thought what was cool about that one, we'll get into that when we do that movie. But what was cool about that is we knew the end.
Right.
So we just wanted to see how you got there.
Exactly.
What else do you got before we get into our final part of this where we have our little debate?
Oh, we're going to have a debate?
No, maybe not.
Okay.
But do you have anything else on it? Because we've hit everything that I wanted to talk about, special effects, Yoda battle.
No.
We could go on all night.
Yeah, I would say I don't think so. That. I think most of it, we've covered most of what I think were the high points of it for sure.
Okay.
So let's debate. What are we going to debate
about? My last question then is... Okay. Where does this rank? Now, remember, by our conversation, you had this dead last.
Last
and you
time?
You had Phantom set. We were reversed.
Okay.
I had this second to last and Phantom last, and you had it reversed.
Okay.
And you liked Phantom better. Like you had mentioned, like, I'd seen this 13 times.
Right.
But... Now, having watched it again...
Now that this one's fresher, I definitely think this is better than Phantom Menace.
Okay.
As a movie overall. I still think the lightsaber battle is better, but we'll
like we said, we're splitting hairs there. It's like 1A, 1B, whatever you want to call it.
There's things about... Like, when we talked about Phantom Menace, the biggest... One of the biggest things that bothered me about it was the pod race scene. I thought that was... not great and very video gamey. This movie has the same thing with the, you know, the hover car chase scene. Like, I could have done without that entire scene where they're chasing the bounty hunter at the beginning through the city and flying around and jumping out of their ships. And, you know, I thought that was, I didn't like that at all. So I think both movies have that kind of ridiculous scene. That
I didn't mind that, and that kind of was part of the story because that's how we ended up getting to where the clones were. The name of that. That's how, you know, the whole conversation with Drax,
right?
And figuring out where, you know, the missing.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Okay, so here's one thing that I noticed that I don't. I don't know if this was intentional or not. I'd like to think that it probably was. So in Empire Strikes Back, there's that scene where Han is trying to outrun the Star Destroyer in the Falcon. Like, they're trying to escape. And he can't escape, so he pulls that move where he attaches to the side
to the of back the Star of the Destroyer, Star Destroyer
and waits there and goes out with the trash. And Boba Fett is in the trash, too, and it follows
right.
him out.
He figured it out, right.
So in this movie, there was a similar scene where...
Yeah. Obi-Wan.
Where almost the exact same thing happens, and Boba Fett sees it. And I'm thinking, is that what sets him up to realize that that's what Han is doing?
That's a good
point. In Empire.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is such a great little callback that... I wonder if that was accidental, or I wonder if it was conscious where he says...
Well, Boba Fett didn't see that he was there, but he knows that he ended up surviving, so he probably
might have guessed what happened or somehow surmised what happened.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, look, we thought we blew him up, so he must have attached to something.
But
so.
I was just like, that's really cool. Like, when I was watching it, it really stuck me that I wonder if that's why he figured that out 30 years later, you know.
Right, exactly. Yeah. No, that's a great point. I didn't even think of that. Because, when he does it, when Han does it in Empire, you got to imagine some time goes by because they're just sitting on the back of the Star Destroyer.
Right, you would think it might be hours or whatever, you know.
Right, but at least Boba Fett, he's in the Star Destroyer and he's like, look, you just don't disappear like that. I had this happen to me once. He's around here somewhere. Right. And then he's probably like, I'll bet you he goes out with the trash or something. Right. And like, after we're getting ready to jump. So that was,
I thought that was cool.
That's a good idea. Yeah. And it's like, you know, like you said, you hope that they planned it
I
that
hope
way.
That they planned
and it wasn't
it that
just
way.
An accident, right. but either
Cause
way,
because if it was
out.
An accident, then it goes back to your favorite term, lazy writing. It's, because they're like, oh, well, we have to do something, and we don't know, so we'll just copy what we did in Empire. you know, that's why I'm going to go with the idea that they did it on purpose to pay it forward. You know,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, so. Look at that. Look at you.
I know. Look at me being bright.
Look at you being. So. Oh, all right. That's it. We're done.
Yeah,
have a good night. Good week, everybody.
We're gonna stop now.
Going out on a high note. Oh, all right. So you have this. So now we're back to actually equal rankings. We won't rank any other movies. So now we're at, you know, you have Sally.
But I guess
this is
the
bright side.
I guess now
we have one last and one second to last.
At some point, we're gonna do the next one because now at this point, this might be better than. This might be the best of the original trilogy. I have to watch the Sith to see now if I liked it more or less. Because I think Anakin's still just a whiny bitch through that whole movie too. So
I actually have three ranked higher.
Yeah,
I have.
I'll have to watch
higher.
It again because it once again, as we established,
we'll talk about.
Yeah, I don't know so I'm very fuzzy on. A lot of the
well,
details.
Well, what I'd like to do is I'd like to get these. We'll wrap this all up. We'll go through all of them and have them done by December.
Right.
You know, finish the Last Jedi right before the next movie.
Right.
So, so we'll definitely be doing. What's it? Return of the Sith.
Revenge of the Sith. Yeah.
Revenge of the Sith. Yeah. All these names.
I know. It's Return of the Jedi and Revenge of the Sith.
Well, that was...
At one point, it was going to be the opposite, right?
It was supposed to be Revenge of the Jedi.
Right.
But Jedi don't get revenge.
Right.
They're like, oh, wait, that doesn't work.
But Sith do, so...
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So is that it? That good?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think we covered just about everything. Like I said, I don't know. We didn't talk about Jar Jar at all.
There's a reason for that.
There's a reason for that.
You don't need to.
But I still kind of feel like I thought that it was funny that he gave the okay to the Emperor to do all of this stuff. So
right. Oh, there's a lot of fan theories.
I know.
Like,
everybody
this entire
thinks like
universe
he's
Jar Jar's fault.
Yeah.
He's a Sith. And it's like, yeah. I don't really pay much
attention
to that.
I don't pay much attention to that either. I just think he's an idiot. But, yeah. But I still, yeah, Jar Jar still bothers me. Just we'll leave it at that.
I know, you wanted to get that on the record.
I had to get it on the record. Just because somebody somewhere on Twitter is going to be like, they didn't even talk about Jar Jar. So had to get it in.
Right. But what I'd say to that is, okay, so you're tuning into our podcast to hear all about Jar Jar?
I don't want Dr. Joe calling me out saying he didn't even talk about Jar Jar, so.
No, we strategically leave stuff out to create conversation.
That's right. That's right. That's what it is.
It's conveniently left out.
Conveniently.
We're conveniently stupid.
Yeah.
We're really not that stupid. We're doing it on purpose.
Right. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So that's good.
I think so.
All right. So what did we leave out? Talk to us on Twitter like a bunch of our listeners are doing, which is great. Hit us up on Twitter at @brightside_chat. You can email us at brightsidechat@gmail.com. We are on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and what was that one that I said?
Castplay or something? I don't even know.
Castbox, yeah. Castbox. So apparently it's a podcast player. Try it out. Check it out. We're not endorsing it. We don't get any money.
Yeah.
Clearly, I can't remember the name.
Yeah. Call me Castbox.
Yeah, exactly. Call me whatever your name is. All right. That good?
Yep.
All right. Let's close up the store.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Take care.
Bye. Hey, Fred. Thanks for listening to the Bright Side Chat. We have a few sponsors we'd like to mention. Arkham Comics and Games of Pearland, Texas. You can find them at arkhamcomicsandgames.com, one word. A. Pennyworth's Comics and Collectibles in Matthews, North Carolina. You can find them at apennyworthscomics.com. Apothesis Comics and Lounge in St. Louis, Missouri. You can find them at apothesiscomicsstl.com. Friendly Neighborhood Comics of Bellingham, Mass. You can find them at friendlycomics.com. Legends Comics and Games of Littleton, Mass. You can find them at legendscomics.com, comics with an X. And also Rubber Chicken Comics of Bellingham, Mass. And you can find them at rubberchickencomics.com. So what's cool is all of our sponsors have agreed to give our listeners a 10% discount on any comics we talk about in our podcast. So if you hear it in our podcast, just go into any of the stores that we've mentioned and tell them you listened to the Bright Side Chat and you heard about this comic there, and they will give you a 10% discount on any of those books. Hopefully you guys can take advantage of that, and thank you to all of our sponsors. Thanks for listening.